Okay, agenda paper seven, it's a review of the requests that the committee has received in relation to IS-7. At the January 2012 meeting, the board asked the staff to review the requests that the committee had discussed regarding the classification of cash flows in accordance with IS-7. So the purpose of this analysis that was requested by the board was to determine whether the classification of cash payments for deferred and contingent consideration arising from a business combination and the classification of cash flows for an operator in a service concession arrangement could be considered collectively. The reason is because we were trying to discuss these issues with the board, and they said, well, why don't you find out the way to discuss them collectively. So we reviewed all the requests that the committee has received so far on IS-7. We review requests from 2004 onwards, and we identify two principles of classification that the committee has used to support its decisions for the classification of cash flows under IS-7, either for issuing a rejection note or for proposing an annual improvement. And these two principles are shown in paragraph 55 of this paper, so view A and view B. View A is that cash flows in IS-7 should be classified in accordance with the nature of the activity to which they relate. And view B is that cash flows in IS-7 should be classified consistently with the classification of the related or underlying item in the statement of financial position. And this is what we called in the paper is consistent with the cohesiveness principle that was developed a while ago in the financial statement presentation project. So as we have noted in paragraph 663 of this paper, we think that both principles exist in IS-7 and they are valid and could both be applied. However, when applied, and that's one thing that we try to prove in this paper, they give different answers, as we proved in the table below paragraph 65. We think, however, that the principle that takes precedence in IS-7 is that cash flow should be classified in accordance with the nature of the activity type in a manner that is most appropriate to the business of the entity. Our conclusion is supported by paragraph 11 in IS-7. That's what it says, paragraph 11. So we would like to hear the committee's views in this respect so that we can use your comments, your views, in analyzing future questions that we receive on the classification of cash flows. By the way, we receive lots of them. Last week, we received two more on the classification. And so in expressing their views, maybe committee members could use the questions that we have, that we are showing in paragraph 74 of this paper as a guide. Well, it would be very useful to see what are your views on the principle that should take precedence in IS-7. And also we would like to ask the committee members the questions on page 21 of this paper. But if you agree, we could start by discussing what is a principle.
I guess.
What do you think is in IS-7?
Am I correct, Denise, to say that our objective in this paper is more to obtain the views of the committee about the analysis than to point to any specific set of decisions?
So
to use an Americanism, this is much more of a blue sky exercise than something as down and dirty as depreciation is. Scott?
Well, I'm not quite sure if the options presented here are the right ones, nor do I necessarily agree with the stated implications of which option we choose. For example, cash flows related to construction services under a service concession. You said if you use the cohesiveness principle, then they'd be investing under the intangible asset model. Actually, I'd still call them operating because the construction services, the outflows, are for labor and materials to construct. That's inventory. That inventory is then exchanged for an intangible asset. So I wouldn't have gotten to the same place, which made me think I might not have understood the principles the same way. I guess we have in the past said that it's investing only if you get a recognized asset, and that is consistent with the cohesiveness principle. I don't think we were using the cohesiveness principle when we got there. I think what we were trying to do is figure out the nature of the cash outflow, more of the nature of the activity. We just said, when the outflow is something that seems to be related to making things better in the future, but it doesn't qualify to be recorded as an asset, what do we do? You know, if we pay to train our employees, I mean, in broad strokes, that's an investing activity. We're training our employees now so that we can make more money later. But I think we made that cut because somebody needs to figure out how to draw a line in terms of payments that are for services that are consumed right away but will benefit the future. What do we do? And the line of, okay, if it's an asset, there's enough evidence that it's investing. We've already concluded elsewhere that there's enough evidence that it benefits the future, so that's where we draw the line. I think that was not because of the cohesiveness principle or anything like it. That was because we were looking at indicators in work that standard setters had already done to tell us what the nature of the activity really was.
Joanna, and then Bernd.
I disagree with Scott. I actually thought this was a superb analysis in the paper, and I personally agree with the conclusions in paragraph 72 and 73, and going back to the principles in 56 as to what those activities as currently defined in 7 are. And I think that we had confused things along the way, obviously, looking at this. And to me, the nature of activity type, to me, is the core principle in 7. And I don't believe we have applied necessarily consistently, and I believe we probably should be looking at doing that. And I think a review of all the things that have been done in 7, and is there anything else funny in 7, would be a good thing to do, to say, well, where do we go from here? I would like to raise just, and it's slightly off the topic, but related, and to me highlights an issue that perhaps we can discuss tomorrow, but it's about the fact that effectively you have concluded in doing this paper, the one criticism of this paper that I have is that you make comments like, this is a summary of the analysis discussed or the committee reached, and you've used the papers that were put to the book to the committee as the basis of the committee's discussions and conclusions. And of course, those papers were staff papers and not the committee's discussions. And as we've raised before, and effectively what you've done is highlight that particular issue. So it's not for this particular subject, but I just raise it because to me, it came out of this paper as an issue, and I think we're going to discuss it tomorrow anyway.
I use the updates. It might have been the case that for one of the issues,
All right. I'll accept that.
But I tried. Well, yeah. I did.
But in essence, I agree with your conclusions in paragraph 72 and 73.
Okay. I have Bernd, Guido, Sarah, Laurence, and then Cass, and Ruth. So, Bernd?
Well, I wholeheartedly agree with Joanna. I think the cohesiveness principle cannot be derived from the current IS 7 as it is. I think it clearly says cash flow by nature of the activity. Of course, in many circumstances, you come to the same answer because by coincidence or because it's the nature of the business, often it is the same thing. So you can either say it's cohesiveness or nature of the activity, but in those cases where it's not the same answer, I think we have to go with view A. and that is the nature of the activity. And otherwise, many issues addressed in the FSP project would have been obsolete if you have cohesiveness principle already in IAS 7. You don't need the financial statement presentation project in many cases because it's already there. So I don't think that is there.
Guido?
Quick,
sorry, wrong button.
I also agree with what the paper says, so the nature of activity should be the one thing. I'm not sure whether we always in the past looked at it but explicitly, but I think implicitly when, for instance, we looked at the interest payments that are capitalized as part of the cost of an asset, we also said, well, first of all, you need to look at what the asset is. If it's inventory, it's operating. If it's not inventory, it might be investing. What I'm worried about, but I guess that we will then look at it, is it's actually paragraph 16 in IS 7 that tells you it's only investing when you recognize it as an asset, and that brings us to decisions that seem, well, at least we have a lot of discussions around this table, is, you know, looking at the exploration expenses. I mean, think about it. There is an option to either recognize it or not, and if you recognize it as an asset, then it's investing. If you don't, it's not investing. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So the problem that I see is really in paragraph 16, and I totally agree with what you are saying. It's the nature of activity, and that should be the basic principle, not whether you recognize something in the statement of financial position or not. So I agree with you.
Sure.
I also quite liked this paper. I thought it did a really nice job of explaining the not only what IS 7 does, but also by looking at the number of questions we've dealt with, I think it pointed out that these questions are pretty important. And I know from my experience in working with investment teams and analyzing the financial statements of clients and possible investees, that we did find tremendous amounts of inconsistency in how things were classified in the cash flow statement. That was quite difficult for our investment staff then to know what something really was meant to be and therefore how we were to deal with it in covenants and whatnot. So I think that a review of the questions that have been addressed in IS 7 and with the hope of maybe we can clarify the principle, i.e., we apparently didn't read paragraph 11 in IS 7, but we need to clarify that this is how you classify in cash flow statements. So I quite like this paper and thought it was a good start. Thanks.
Okay. Laurence.
I was quite convinced by the paper, particularly that paragraph 66, that was saying that cash flows should be classified in accordance with the nature of the activity type, with the activity type in a manner which is most appropriate to the business of the entity. I quite like this principle. But when I looked how it has been applied in some cases, particularly cash flows for construction services under service concession arrangements, and part of my outreach, you know, on that topic about concession operators and payment to the grantors, I got that feedback, and I understand that you have been receiving also some comments by concession operators in Spain, where they see that their business activity as one of purchasing an intangible asset, not as one as constructing, as one of an operating nature. And effectively, in that type of activity, I understand from analysts that the analysts look at the investment they make in terms of investing activities, not in terms of operating activities. All these cash amounts that are being disbursed in constructing an asset that is being exchanged for the license, that is being recognized as an intangible asset or as a financial asset. And when you think of it more, if I consider again what we discussed in the previous paper where we say payment to the grantor when you're under an intangible asset model is an intangible. So what are you going to have? All payments you make to the providers for constructing constructing the infrastructure will be classified as operating, but the payments that you make to the grantor will be classified as investing because it is the purchase of an intangible asset? Is this the outcome we're getting to? In which case, I do have a problem how it is being applied or interpreted. I agree with the principle, but I think that with the illustration you have made, how to apply the principle for classification based on the nature of the activity, particularly for concession operators, mm-hmm. the answer might not be as straightforward as you indicate to say that it's always operating activities.
Cass?
I think I just echo most of them, most of the members. I agree with the staff recommendation and the classification based on the nature or activity. I think it's a good principle, but I think I expect if we can come up with some further detailed principle or guideline based on this principle, but I understand it is very challenging. We do have this principle in the current standard, but there's some diversity of the judgment. That is the fact. I think the FSB proposed in the past that like a capital investment and operating to combine as operating. I thought that is the kind of proposal, because understanding that is pretty much difficult to distinguish those two. So understanding this is challenging, but if we have some kind of guideline based on this, I think that may be helpful to reduce the diversity.
Ruth, Peggy, and Charlotte.
I think it was a useful paper. I think it indicates that sometimes when we made a decision, we may not have really thought about whether we were using an activity basis or something else. I think if we say the activity basis is the way forward, it calls into question, in particular, the March 2008 decision on investing activities and exploration expenditure. I think we would have to revisit it because I'm not sure you would get to the same answer. So I think it's been useful in that, and it might be a useful guide for going forward. But I have a bigger concern, which is, Denise, you said you keep getting more questions on this. Has the standard passed its use-by date, these three categories, operating, investing, and financing? If preparers are very worried about which category they put something in, it's obviously useful to users to look at certain cash flows and not that useful to look at others. And what if we just removed all the categories, just took them away, and asked people to describe their cash outflows and their cash inflows and asked for specific types to be disclosed but not categorized at all? What difference would that make? Because the users would still be able to figure out what it is they want to figure out from the cash flow statement, and we will just take the classification issue away altogether. Because I think we're spending a lot of time telling people how to classify something. And I think at the end of the day, and I defer to the user group, users know what they're looking for and they will get the information, however the preparer categorizes it. And so is it really a waste of time to create these classifications at all? So I put that challenge out there in terms of what we take back to the board, because this is an old standard and it doesn't seem to be working so well anymore.
My understanding, and I'd love to be further informed on this, is that certainly in some companies, operating cash flows are a KPI and a compensation device. And so there's an awful lot of motive. I think, Peggy, you've actually raised that in previous discussion.
I've seen it personally in many cases where people, operating cash flow is a big KPI in people's compensation because they feel that management might not have the ability to influence the financing or the investing cash flows, but the operating they do. And people will do people try and improve operating cash flow as much as they can. So I agree with the paper. I thought it was very good. Just one comment which I gave yesterday was that even though it's not a converged standard with what was FAS 95 cash flows in U.S. GAAP, there's a lot of similarities, so perhaps you need to just talk to the FASB about this one as well. But I agree with this.
Can I just ask Peggy a question on that?
Sure.
Is that KPI internally derived or externally derived?
Externally.
So it's based on the external reporting.
It's the reporting.
It won't be derived from an internal system. Mm-hmm. So what's reported externally actually does make a difference?
From a cash flow statement. There's not that much you can do with a cash flow statement, and except in cases like this, and it's a very important metric for most companies. That's my experience anyway. Maybe that's U.S. companies.
As an example, those operators I met in the construction operators, they told me that their financing, the interest, is based upon the operating cash flows. So it's also a key measure for some covenants and for some debt, because the banks lend the financing for some projects that would be investments over the long term, and they look at the operating cash flows to determine the level of interest. So it is a key metric, not only for compensation, but also for financing and closes and covenants and so on.
I obviously understand all of that. It's very important. But what I'm saying is that, and that's why I asked Peggy if it's for internal purposes the external information is used, I understand how important it is externally. But my question is, do we have to tell people where to put things so that users can get the information they need, or will the users take the information they need anyway from what's disclosed as long as it's disclosed? Which is why I asked Peggy, do you use the external stuff or not? If the answer was no, we do it internally, it would be different.
Charlotte?
I'm always generally supportive of the paper. I hadn't really thought of a lot of things in that way and classified, and that's what's quite interesting to see them grouped. I do agree it should be the activity, and specifically the activity for the business, because different businesses do activities for different reasons, I guess. So what is financing for a bank is probably, and operating for a bank is very different from what's operating for another entity. And I suppose the question I had on the cohesiveness principle is it's often quite hard to be cohesive when the sort of balance sheet classification doesn't necessarily tally with the cash flow classification. There isn't a sort of one-for-one match of where you would go. My only other question was, I was surprised that internally we see lots of questions on classification of things as financing, more from the sort of income statement side, but also from the cash flow side. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem to be that those questions on whether something is financing come through. It seems to be a lot more or things investing or operating. So I was surprised about that.
Pat, and then maybe we can wrap this one up for a moment.
Well, before I make a comment, Denise, could you clarify for me under this proposal how a cash purchase of a fixed asset would be reported in the cash flow statement if the fixed asset's used in operations? Would the cash purchase of the fixed asset be an operating cash outflow?
I think it would be operating.
Right. And that would be a significant difference.
I mean, it would be investing under the current, I mean, it's a purchase.
Under the current.
Yes.
But if we said that it should, if the question came to us and we're looking at the way the company uses it in its business, and it's using it in its business in operations, wouldn't it then be an operating cash outflow?
Well, what I'm saying in this paper is that you should follow the current definitions of operating, investing, and financing that are in IS 7. if you were in the financial statement presentation project, you would say it's operating because we changed those definitions.
Well, I'm sort of confused then about what you think paragraph 11 says of IAS 7. I said I'm confused about where this takes us.
No, I said investing.
This is the difficulty with that nature language, right? The definition of investing activities is acquisition and disposal of long-term assets and other investments, not included in cash equivalents. So then we have paragraph 11 that says classification by activity provides information that allows users to assess the impact of those activities on the financial statements. I think the activity we're talking about, when the activity is the acquisition and disposal of long-term assets, that's investing, even if you're going to use those assets in your operations. So it's rather circular. I mean, you know, we didn't come up with this only if you get a recognized asset out of nowhere. We came up with it by looking at the definition of investing activities.
It's just that the way I interpret paragraph 11, and even I got confused when you asked me,
yeah.
But of course, a purchase of property, plant, equipment is investing, but I think it says classification by activity provides information that you need to classify cash flows, but as defined, I think, as the activities are, or according to the way activities are defined in paragraph 6 of IS 7.
Okay. So,
which specify
the nature of activity as defined in IAS 7, not as the business season. So, when you lay out your principles in 55A,
yes,
by the nature of the activity to which they relate, you mean activity as defined in IAS 7, not in a manner in which is most appropriate to the business as set out in paragraph 11 of IAS 7.
Well, it's just in paragraph 11 you've got both elements. You've got the use of judgment, but also you need to look at the definition. You're constrained by the definitions in IAS 7. That's the way I interpret it.
I think it's those definitions that we have sometimes relied upon to say it matters, you know, what entries you book, because the definition of financing activities is activities that result in changes in the size and composition of equity and borrowings. And the definition of investing is acquisition and disposal of long-term assets.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of operating is everything that's not investing in financing.
And what do you do when you increase a long-term asset and increase debt at the same time?
Well, that's not a cash transaction at all, right? But I mean, I think we, you know, we got to the answers in some cases that we got to just by looking at the definition. Well, did you change the level of equity borrowing? If so, that's financing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you change the amount of long-term assets? If so, that's investing. The answer to both of those is no, it must be operating, because that's what the definitions say.
Yeah, but you can't just, as you pointed out, you can't just look at one side. You have to look at the other side, too.
Well, one side is cash. Otherwise, you have nothing to book, I think. So, I mean, it's always the other side. I mean, we can make this hard, and certainly paragraph 11 gives us ample basis to make up different ways to think about it, but the definitions I thought were in the past what we fell back on to say the way we identify the nature is what you booked.
Okay, Denise, where do we go from here?
Well, I guess we're confirming that that's the principle according to the classification according to the activity as defined here. And that's the one that should take prevalence.
Is that a good description?
Don't know.
While I agree with the principle, I disagree with the illustration of the application of the principle to concessions. Because if I look at paragraph 16 of IS 7, where it says the separate disclosure of cash flows arising from investing activities is important because the cash flows represent the extent to which expenditures have been made for resources intended to generate future income and cash flows, which is typically the case of a concession activities when they construct. And in addition, in IFRIC 12, in the basis for conclusion, I'm checking again, but I think in paragraph 9, they do acknowledge the continued involvement of both grantor and operator of the term of the arrangement, accompanied by a heavy upfront investment, we use the word investment, raises questions over what assessability should be recognized by the operator. So I can see the arguments that are being made by those concession constructors and operators that what they are, when constructing an asset, they are not just constructing an asset for, so as to generate revenue from the construction services. They are investing into long-term asset, which is the intangible asset or the financial asset, so as to get revenues over the long term. They are in the investing activity. And I understand that from users, analysts, banks, that's how they see the business activity in terms of cash outflows when those entities disburse the cash.
I guess the question I would ask you is, isn't that a more fundamental objection to the two-step constructing and then operating approach that 12 takes? There were a lot of arguments that it all ought to be collapsed into a single activity, would I guess be consistent with what you're arguing for the cash flow statement. But how do I get there, given that the interpretation says I've got a revenue-generating activity called construction, which is where all my cash flows, and well, then that turns into something else?
The cash inflows actually come from operating the license.
The cash outflows, excuse me, you're right. The big cash outflows are the construction, aren't they?
Yeah, but the revenue-generating activity is the one from using the license. So I suppose that the cash outflow is the one from purchasing the intangible asset.
Well, but we recognize revenue on the construction activity.
Yeah, we do. That's right. So you may collect the revenue through the public using the concession, but the actual generation of the revenue really is through construction followed by operation.
That was, back when we did it for 12, that was something some people objected to.
You shouldn't recognize revenue on the construction, because then you recognize too much revenue, because you get revenue from the government, and then you get revenue from the users, and gee, aren't you doubling up because you're only collecting the cash from the users? But we kind of decided that back then.
Well, except that we do recognize a two-step approach for if under IFRIC 12 in the income statement, but it's only one step reflected in cash flow statement.
Yes, because actually the compensation we get for the construction, that revenue is in the form of the right or the license to possess itself.
That's right. Yeah. But we're talking about the cash outflows for the construction that we're dealing with.
Correct.
But what I was telling you is, so if talking again about those payments to the grantor, where we say it's in addition to the license, so we'll have some cash outflows for construction of the bridge or the road, which will be cash outflows in operating, but the payments to the grantor will be classified in investing because these are not operating, they will be for the license. Does that make sense to split those amounts?
Well, but if the cash outflows are investing, then some of the cash inflows must be investing. But that ain't what's happening. When we get the cash inflows from operating the concession, absolutely those are operating cash inflows. So I'm not sure it works out real well to have all investing outflows and all operating inflows.
But that's the same as PP&E.
That is what you have with PP&E, that's right.
That's what you have for PP&E.
But here we're getting revenue, we're recognizing revenue from the construction activity. I thought that's what led to the classification.
Yeah, but the actual cash inflows is from using the license, not from the construction service.
Okay.
I just said that if we don't want to, and I guess that's not something that we can do, is to tell the board maybe you should rethink the whole definition of what investing, operating, and so on is, financial statement presentation project, then we should, and that's my understanding, that's what the staff proposes here, stay with what IS7 defines. And then we could, maybe there are issues like the one we discussed now for some time, or other issues that are also in the back of this paper, where people say, well, it's nice that you tell us this is the principle, but we have a problem with applying the principle in this specific situation. So maybe we, in the future, we still need, even if we clarify, we still need to give guidance out there. The only thing that we might want to reconsider, I don't know whether that's something that we want to do, is, as I said before, in 16, it was introduced in the I think 2 years ago or so, 1 year ago, that only something that you recognize as an asset is investing. I think that is the thing that causes a lot of concern.
I agree.
That might be the issue that we should, I don't know what we want to, but that we should look at. And then the rest, without any doubt, even if we say, well, this is the principle, you should look at it, we will still have some things coming in. If you look at the backlog here, there's no clear answer.
Two questions. Having gone through this exercise, is this an area, one of the things that we said we would consider is whether or not educational material, standalone educational material, was something that would be useful to our constituents. Is this paper a step on the way to producing, given the number of inquiries that we seem to get all the time about this, is this paper a step on the way to producing that kind of material? And if so, is it something that we ought to ask Denise to carry forward, maybe not bring back to the committee for other than editorial comments, but is this the sort of thing that qualifies for that?
Yeah, and you know, actually, we were talking about these are really good assignments to give the students. I mean, because it tests your knowledge, and you have to look at things that aren't quite as straightforward. So it would be perfect for education. I realize you're talking IFRS education, but you were thinking undergraduate too.
Guido? The only concern I have is that the cash flow statement, KPIs derived from the cash flow statement are very, very important. So my doubt is that giving out just educational material will not help us. There needs to be something that has a higher level of, it should be mandatory requirements and not educational. As much as I like this idea, but...
It's okay. I'm not invested in that one. You should pardon the expression. Joanna?
I guess I'm coming back to what the purpose of this paper was. And paragraph 2 in this paper is, it's the board asked us, or directed, the committee to look at these two issues, as well as others, to consider whether these issues could be dealt with collectively. So I'm actually, you know, even when we get to the conclusion of this, slightly confused as to what actually the board is looking for, and you saying, can it be used as educational? I'm not quite sure. I guess it's a question of, well, what are we trying to do, and what does the board want from us? Does the board want us to say something like, as Ruth said, we'll throw it away and start again, or if we fix this, these will be it will be easy from now. I'm just not quite sure where this actually does take us, which I guess is what your question is, Wayne, but I'm coming back to the objective of it.
Well,
I'm not sure whether Denise has got an answer.
The story from the board, and certainly board members can correct me, is we took two recommendations about cash flows to the board at the same board meeting. One was a recommendation to do something, the other was a recommendation to do nothing. The board members looked at that and said, I don't understand where you guys are coming from. Mm-hmm. And you got it, you know, we just don't understand why one is important enough to do something and the other isn't. And then I think it was my fault because I said, well, you know, we've got a whole bunch of this stuff and maybe looking at just these two isn't the best way to deal with it. Maybe we ought to throw them all together and see what floats to the top. I'm mixing metaphors hideously here. So that was what Denise did. And now the question is, okay, now that she's done it, and there seems to be mostly agreement that she did a workmanlike job with it, I think she did, what do we do next? Ruth?
I think what we have is a guiding principle that we can use from this. And so rather than post it as educational material, I think we could use it as a guiding principle for us for when we get these questions. That's what I thought the purpose of this was, so that now we can look back again at those requests that came in. We can look back at the decisions we made earlier to see if the guiding principle works in respect of that one, or do we need to change it, the capitalisation question. So I would see this as not educational, but guiding for us in our decision making. And so maybe it's a sort of thing that every time we get a cash flow classification question, this paper comes back and says, remember, this is the guiding principle we thought would be useful. Let's see if we can apply it and if it will help. That's how I envisage it would work. And I think it could be helpful. It may not solve every question, but it could help us to solve.
And I guess the genesis of my question was, if we think it's that good and that useful, why not share it? Joanna?
Which then also comes back to, as the ideal would be, we don't get any more questions. We're obviously getting questions because it is not clear in 7/ we're perhaps being inconsistent in how we have applied it because we haven't been following this guiding principle. So maybe it is, yes, to get something out there, because to me the objective should actually be not as a guiding principle for us, because I actually don't want any more questions on where to put it in the cash flow, because our constituents should be able to have sufficient clarity to be able to make the judgment call themselves as to where it goes, instead of asking us to make their judgment call from them. So to me, that is actually, me having asked the question and now just put it through my mind, that should be our end objective as to what do we need to do to actually say we're not going to get a single other question because there is clarity. Okay, we're never going to achieve that. But there is clarity that people can use their own judgment, because quite honestly, the more we do give answers, the more people are going to keep coming to us because they think that's our job. So maybe what I might now, my suggestion to Denise, having heard the discussion around here and looking at these other ones that we've got in Appendix A, is to be able to say, can we put out some principles or some guidance to 7, in the board's name maybe, to help people around this not to have to come back to us to ask the question?
It's just that if you had a look at Appendix B, for example, this submission, I mean, the question is whether you follow, for the classification of cash flows, whether you follow the definitions in IS 7, which we just discussed, or whether you follow this new sentence or phrase that was added to paragraph 16. I mean, I think there is a problem because people are wondering which is the principle that takes prevalence. And that was a question, a very general question that we raised here.
IFRIC update to say we've discussed it and this is the principle, or some, so that, Because, yes, we have confused people because we've been inconsistent. Yeah. So to get it out there that actually we acknowledge that and this is the principle that everybody should be applying, including us, maybe that's going to help.
The thing I had taken away from the board meeting was effectively along those lines that we've had a series of questions on individual items and perhaps we ought to take a step back and think, is there something else that we should be doing instead which would give a broader, better guidance for people so that we don't continue to keep getting these individual questions.
Guido? I think somebody said that before, and I think that's a very good idea, that maybe the staff could go back, look at all the issues that we have dealt with before in IS7 and all the other ones we have in our backlog, official or unofficial requests, and then try to find whether, based on what has been said in this paper, we could come up with a clear answer to that. And if we can, then it makes sense to publish something, maybe even more than an IFRIC update. Because again, I agree with you, when I look at this Appendix B, it's all about, can I recognize an asset under paragraph 16? And that's really the problem that we had in the past. Okay. Which is something that we cannot change because it's still in there. I mean, that the question is then, would we ask the board if we think it's the right answer to change 16 again?
Yes, I think that's a very good idea.
So the staff has adequate guidance?
I think so.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay. I think then that concludes the public portion of today's meeting.